This COVID-19 crisis certainly has been a boon to video conferencing businesses, as more of us are forced to hold meetings or just try and keep in touch with loved ones from the safety of our home offices or lounge rooms. Several services have seen a surge in activity, among them Google Meet, Cisco WebEx, Microsoft Teams and Skype. But undoubtedly the most popular free video conferencing app right now is Zoom, based in the US, which now claims 200 million users a day around the world as lockdown measures tighten. The app, however, has also been plagued with security and privacy issues, which the company says it's trying to get on top of. Michael Chetner is head of Australia and Asia Pacific to Zoom Video Communications. Michael, good morning. Welcome to Breakfast.
Good morning. Great to be with you, Fran.
I stress we're on a phone line this morning, I think, not a video link. Zoom has gone from 10 million users last year to 200 million users globally today. This has been a very good crisis for Zoom, hasn't it?
Well, I think firstly, the important thing for us is how do we help in this pandemic? And I guess the rewarding thing for us is that we are keeping, you know, people and their lives going and keeping businesses open as well. And the other interesting thing is that we are seeing interesting use cases as well of the app, in light of this difficult time that we have.
Well, there's no doubt people, lots of us, are using it, but there's also no doubt that as that surge of users has occurred, it's revealed some flaws. And even Zoom's founder and CEO, Eric Yuan, admitted earlier this month Zoom had, quote, fallen short of the community's privacy and security expectations. What's the key privacy and security flaw that you've located, and what are you doing about it?
Yeah, so Fran, I think it's important to set some context also around how Zoom was being used before the crisis, and it was developed for enterprise and corporate use. So in those situations where there was time and large companies do have IT departments that can run through these security measures and for it to be used in a safe way, we can see now that that's obviously limited in time to be able to do that in this frantic period at the moment. So what we're seeing at the moment is that ultimately there's two things that we need to address, and we've done that quite quickly once they've been identified. The actual aspect around user settings, which have actually been built into the product, but it's been on us to actually make those more explicit and actually to change some of those settings to reflect not only the fact we have corporate users, but we also have, you know, a lot of social use and consume use as well. Things like setting passwords by default, putting in waiting rooms that you actually manually have to accept people into a call, and also being able to throw those people out too, should there be any behaviour that's just not warranted at all. The other thing that we've done is educate users as well. I mean, we're seeing a whole host of students and teachers and health workers using Zoom now to provide their services as well. So aspects around educating on how to use Zoom safely, putting in some of those, or suggesting also to governments, state and federal, some of the configurations and settings, which we've done with the Department of Education in New South Wales. So those safe places for students and teachers, in that example, to use Zoom.
Well, so that's critical. I mean, the issue of the safety of children, well, so many more of them are online at the moment, not just for school, which is official use. And we have heard stories of overseas of school classrooms being Zoom bombed or, you know, infiltrated by people making some sort of inappropriate or lewd comments, but also kids just at home generally on their screens more, and how to protect them. But in terms of Zoom and, you know, the concerns about child exploitation, how focused have you been on this, and what have you been able to do to try and to cut down this thing called Zoom bombing?
Well, as I mentioned before, Fran, it's around working together with the state and federal bodies to be able to provide some of those configurations. Where I mentioned before, the speed in which Zoom was adopted for all these use cases, we couldn't even envisage. So it's on to us to work together with all of the bodies to be able to have children operating in a safe environment.
But just because it's been adopted by more people isn't really an excuse for you that you didn't have these privacy and security things built in from the start, is it?
Well, no, as I said, we did have these built in. It is more around educating those bodies in how to actually enable some of those security features. But what we have done is we've proactively put in place these settings to be default. So you must put a password on your meeting room. Mm-hmm. You have to admit people in a waiting room so they cannot just join any meeting. And then the other thing is, look, you know, we have had some instances where the meeting IDs, which is essentially like a phone number, being shared on social media. So that cyber hygiene, which we talk about, not just for Zoom, but for all you know, applications, is really important. You know, we wouldn't share our mobile number on social media because we would welcome, you know, unwanted calls. It's exactly the same here. But it is, you know, definitely for us, you know, working quickly and responding quickly to be able to put these things in place. We've also put together, you know, got some cybersecurity experts onto our council, as well as brought in Alex Stamos, who's working with NATO and with other organisations to help us in that regard.
Okay.
As well.
What about, should people be concerned about hackers stealing subscriber data and credentials? How secure is that information?
Yes, and I think this is something, as I mentioned before, this impacts all you know, applications that are used on the internet. You know, what we're seeing is that requirement to keep passwords and keep information confidential, as you normally would with any passwords that you use for any type of software. That's really important because, unfortunately, there's a whole lot of activity around taking that information and applying it to many different applications to be used, you know, in the wrong way.
Just finally, we're talking about privacy and security issues online. Australians will soon be asked to download a COVID-19 tracing app. Do you have concerns about how that could potentially be used by government? I wonder, you who thinks about these things nonstop at the moment, I suggest, would be, are you in a voluntary sign-up?
Well, my view on that is that there needs to be a trade-off between privacy and then helping the community at large. You know, this is not a normal time. So if it means that we can relax our current restrictions quicker with the data collected by the app, well, then we should consider it. I think there would need to be more information to understand how it would be done. I think that's a big thing. The public at large would want to know that for that trade-off. But as I said, we do need to be practical in these difficult times.
All right. Michael Chetner, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Fran.
Michael Chetner is the head of Australia and Asia Pacific for Zoom Video Communications. The use of Zoom has risen exponentially. It's gone from approximately 10 million paid and unpaid users globally at the end of December to more than 200 million by March, and probably more by now.